It's not your first podcast, right?
No, not my first.
No, but I tried to find a podcast of you on Spotify and only one popped up. So
then Which one was that?
The Active Life RX
podcast. Yeah, okay, that's a little bit older.
It's like 4 years.
Yeah, right? I guess I'm not that popular anymore.
No, and I was wondering, that can't be true. Yeah. And then I figure out that there are some on Apple Podcasts. So.
Yeah, and there's I think there's a few on YouTube as well. Yeah.
Good old times. I'm not popular anymore. No one wants to podcast with me.
Well, I mean, time does fly and change things. You know, I'm referred to as Patrick Coach now, not as Michelle Laton, you know. So time flies and that's normal.
But it's part of the evolution, right?
Of course. Of course. It's nice to know. I've been a coach longer than I have been an athlete now. So it's normal that some people know me only as the coach.
Yeah, but maybe we start at the beginning. So, yeah. I mean, I'm doing CrossFit for like 10 or 12 years. Mm-hmm. So I know you as an athlete. A lot of people probably who started like the last 5 years, they don't even know that you have been an athlete. Mm-hmm. So how did the CrossFit thing start for you?
The CrossFit thing? So I started CrossFitting in December of 2009. You know, to make a long story short, I was studying in design and art, and I needed to find part-time work before I started to look for full-time work in my field. And I had gotten into the gym. I'd been an athlete my whole life. And during school, during university, I stopped being active. But then I regained some fitness in the last year of university. And so in order to not pay a gym membership, I applied at a few gyms to be a secretary or, you know, a front desk manager or
it's
whatever.
Smart.
Yeah. And CrossFit Montreal called me back and they offered me an interview and I had no idea what CrossFit was. So it was a huge stroke of luck because I don't think I would have found CrossFit otherwise. I mean, eventually maybe one day, but ended up getting a job interview at CrossFit Montreal and they gave me the job as the front desk manager slash clerk. And so they just asked me to know what I was talking about. So they asked me to do CrossFit. So I did their intro on ramp and I fell in love with it. So that's how my CrossFit thing started. And then maybe like 3-4 weeks into doing that, I found out that there was a competition. I don't know if you know OPT. Who's now OPEX, who started OPEX,
okay.
Michael Fitzgerald.
Yeah, sure.
They were running a competition called the Big Dogs and it was done in the local gyms that followed OPT's training. And so they organized a Big Dogs competition and like after 3 or 4 weeks of doing CrossFit, I did my first competition. So that like I
How
was
did that turn out?
Yeah, I did it super scaled. I did banded pull-ups and I did my first overhead squats ever in that competition. So it went super well. I had no expectations. I loved it. I loved that it reminded me of when I did sports when I was young. It put me in a place that I hadn't been in so long, just to kind of put myself out there physically. Design is a very competitive field. So you always try and get the best idea out. You research a lot. There's a lot of work, but the competition is so... It's not as cut dry, you know, like it's not always the most talented designer that wins. But in sports, it's hard to take talent out of the equation. And in CrossFit, there's a huge work ethic that's rewarded. So I just love that. You know, when I played water polo as a young person, I say that there's people that are looking at me and like, she's not old, but when I was very young, I played water polo, which was my sport. I had a really strong work ethic. I would go to my practices. I would go to the guys' practice. I would stay after my practice. I would do everything possible to improve. And CrossFit rewarded that. So when I found CrossFit and I was able to do that and be rewarded for it, it was just like finding a new life. So first competition in January 2010. And then I did all the competitions I can find, team, individual, and everything. And then after that, I qualified for my first games in 2011.
So you did banded pull-ups in 2010 and CrossFit games in 2011?
Yes.
Do you think that is still possible today?
Unfortunately, everything's possible. I'm not going to say it's not possible because in 2015, I believe, Carrie Pierce was in our region and she went from just trying out CrossFit, I think, 6 months prior, and she was at regionals and she made it to the games. So it's still possible in relatively recent history. It's not as easy as it used to be. Not to say that it was easy, but just the sport's just so popularized and there's so many people doing it, and the pool of athletes is getting bigger and bigger. But you can be really talented in CrossFit. It is still possible. I'm not like I coached a 15-year-old who did CrossFit for the first time with me at a camp when I was in Vancouver, and she made the teen CrossFit games that same year. So it's, you know, it's there. It can be done.
I just did a podcast interview with Adrian Bosman like a few weeks ago, and we talked about the evolution of the CrossFit Games and the CrossFit Open, yeah, which I think started in 2011,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was the first year.
So a lot has happened since then. How did your personal career as an athlete went on from 2011?
Yeah, I mean, as an athlete, I was there 6 years. I enjoyed every year. The beauty about going to the CrossFit Games is that you get exposure to vulnerability on a very regular basis. So if you're open to it, you can grow really a lot. It's a very, very rewarding career, personally. So to me, like looking at it from my perspective now, I think that I'm very fortunate to have done that. Just as a person, I think that I'm better equipped to, you know, for work or for difficult situations and struggles. Every year was hard. 2011 was hard because I was a beginner and I didn't know what I was doing. So there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of comparison, a lot of doubt, you know, wondering if I deserve to be there and wondering if that was just a fluke. And then 2012, you know, it was my sophomore year, my second year. I'm coming in with all these expectations, with an unrealistic idea of what I could do, not really understanding what the depth of CrossFit Games actually is. And then I got in my mind, the worst possible finish ever, which was one place better than my first year. You know, it wasn't, I was like, I worked so hard. I did so many things. I worked, anyway, and then you get that. So that is an important learning experience, because you realize like, you know, I'm not working at the right things. I'm working hard, but I'm not doing the right things. So then 2013 was more successful. 2014 was the most successful. And then 2015 was the year we had Murph.
That was great to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched that and I cringe, but like we were all really sick after that. All of us had heat injuries. We were all screwed. And it was very difficult. And that's the year I realized that in reality, being a professional athlete was not for me. I loved it. I loved the process of it. What I love the most about CrossFit is learning, doing new things, being coached in different things. Like I had a coach that I loved to work with for agility. And it was my favorite sessions of the week. And so being a beginner on a regular basis was what I actually loved. But I didn't want to win at all cost. And the cost of 2015 was just too high for me to pay. So I realized that, you know, I love this and I love that I'm doing this at high level, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And then you realize that about yourself, like, huh, you know, I thought that's what I wanted, but I actually don't want that. And then I retired in 2016 to give it one last shot so that I can do it on my own terms. And I think that was the best decision I've ever made. So, you know, I've evolved as much as the sports has evolved. And I think every athlete can attest to that in a positive or in a negative way. It depends who you speak to. But I think seeing the sport evolved from 2011, specifically the Open, from 2011 to today, it's kind of the same, but it's changed in the right way, in my opinion, having it 3 weeks instead of five. In fact, 2011, I'm sure Adrian told you.
Yeah.
There was a screw up. It was 6 weeks. So we did the same workout like for 2 weeks nonstop. So yeah, it's come a long way. And, you know, it's corny and everything, but I think the Open is such a really nice time of year. when you're an athlete, it's really annoying. Like when you're a games athlete, you're like, ugh, I have to compare myself with other people without being on the floor with them. That's the worst. But now as a coach, and it's like a ceremonial start to what's to come. And there's so much unknown. You know, again, when you're an athlete, you don't like that. Like, you don't like the unknown. But when you're a coach, I find it's so exciting. Like, I'm excited to see what this year happens. Like, you know.
I mean, the Open are right around the corner, right? Yes. It's just a few weeks.
Yes, yes. It is. It's like 4 weeks or something. Maybe a little bit more than that. But yeah. Wait. No. I think it's like in 3-4 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, how did you feel after you retired as an athlete? I think there's like when you're very attached to a sport.
Yeah.
And from, I mean, CrossFit, it's very demanding. You have to train a lot. You have to work out a lot.
Yeah.
And then you do your games and it's your last appearance. And then you say, okay, I'm done. Mm-hmm. How did it feel like on the mental side, probably?
It's a bittersweet experience. I think that retirement looks different for everybody. I was ready to leave. I was ready to move on and to do different things. I wanted to coach. I wanted to work. So I was a little bit over being in the gym for 4 hours and just training. I was excited to get in the gym and coach other athletes and stuff like that. So for me, it was actually really nice. It was still, you know, heartbreaking when I left the stage, Home Depot Center in Carson, you know, and I get to go back this year because semifinals are there again. But I think I was really ready. So, like I said, for me, it was a really good experience. I had other things lined up. So one of the most important things when you're an athlete is to not be absorbed in that world. And there are different degrees of that. You know, if you're competing at a high level, it's really important to remember that you have your whole person outside of that. It's a part of your identity, but it's not your full identity. Obviously, if you're a perennial winner, you're a professional athlete, that line is thin, you know, it's very thin. But being, I think I was a successful athlete, but I wasn't, I never podiumed or anything like that. So being realistic about myself, I knew that it was the right decision for me to make, because otherwise I would just continue to hit my head on the wall for like a top 10 finish maybe. So just the risk versus reward just wasn't there. But then in order to help myself kind of stay an athlete, because it's a huge part of who I am, not just a CrossFit athlete, but an athlete, I decided to compete in weightlifting. So I took 2 years after competing in CrossFit and I did weightlifting. And then after that, I actually retired from sport. And that's when I realized, when I did that weightlifting, I was like, yeah, no, I'm done. I don't need to do this competition thing. And so I stopped that, but then went into more recreational competitive sports like running, triathlon, which is what I'm doing now. And so it keeps me active and competing in a very different way. It has I have a very specific goal. I have some specific times I want to hit. I have training with groups and stuff like that. Having stuff like that helps retirement. So if people out there are listening and they're looking to maybe move on to something different, just set yourself up for success and recognize what you love about competing. And if it's because you need something to do, then give yourself something to do. If it's because you love being on the competition floor, then find another sport that's unrelated, become a beginner again, which is super fun, and do that. And then like just keep doing those things, keep yourself busy, and it'll go really nice and smooth. But when I retired, I did have people reach out and asking me if I needed help to kind of manage that mentally. But because, I mean, I started CrossFit when I was like 24. So I retired, I was 31 already. I'm like, I'm good. You know, it wasn't a huge part of my life, you know?
So you're one of those athletes who really made a very, very good transition from being an athlete to become a very great coach. How does the coaching thing started for you? Did you have a lot of exposure to coaching before being a coach? Like, you've been coached yourself, of course, but did you
Yeah. I've been coached my whole life, right? Like I was an athlete when I was young and things like that. I've always looked up to my coaches and I've always listened to my coaches and I've always recognized why I love certain coaches and why I didn't love certain coaches. I think it's natural in me to want to teach and coach. Like when I found CrossFit as a front desk, it didn't take me very long to get my level one and to start move from the front desk to coaching. So I had been coaching at an affiliate since 2010, summer of 2010. And like not just coaching here and there, like I was a full-time coach. And then when I started competing more professionally, then my work started to become more part-time. But I've always coached my whole career. I've always coached at least once a week, at least. And when I wasn't competing or in season, I would coach pretty much full-time. And then I coached for the level one seminar staff. So I applied for the level one seminar staff and I got on there. So it's a passion of mine. One of the biggest things that I love about CrossFit, like I mentioned, is learning. And one of the biggest things I love about coaching is learning. So to me, it just felt very natural to go into the coaching, but I didn't, you know, retire from competition and think I'm going to open DecaComp and we're going to be, you know, a big coaching company and things like that. Like, DecaComp opened up because I also loved programming. Remember, I was a designer, so programming to me was like a creative outlet. So I really loved to dabble in that world to kind of like create something, to have an adaptation and things like that. I had done so much training, so I figured I would take what I had learned and experienced and put it into practice and provide athletes with something that I felt was good training, effective training for progression, but also with an athlete mindset, like this can't kill you. You know, like some people don't know the impacts of certain training styles. So I felt like it was a good way to approach coaching. And then in 2016, we did the Invitational in Oshawa. And that night after that Invitational, I was with Pat. And Pat and I had trained for my last year. So Pat qualified for his first year as an individual in 2016. And I was retiring. And he needed a place to live because he was studying in Montreal. But then he was moving to Toronto. But for the summer, he wanted to train with me. So we ended up training together the summer of 2016. So he ended up living with me. Got to know him. And then at the Invitational dinner, I just kind of said, just out of the blue, because I kind of do these things sometimes. I don't think things through. And I said to him, you know, I'm planning on opening a programming, you know, company. I want to start coaching. If you're looking for a coach, I'd love to coach you. I think that we'd work well together. We got along really well. We're very similar. And he agreed. Like a little bit later on, he had had a coach that I was really good friends with and, you know, it didn't end up working out for them. But so he agreed to jump on with me. And I'm very fortunate because he helped me mold into the coach I am today. If we are successful, it's because he gave me constant feedback and because I had no choice but to be good if I was going to coach the guy that was on the podium after his first year at the CrossFit Games. So I really had to step up. And luckily for me, we work really well together. I learned a lot. I think I had a good perspective and I had good experience. And I think I had a good eye for good coaching. So it turned out well.
So, I mean, I know how coaching inside an affiliate looks like.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what coaching an elite athlete looks like. So how is it to coach someone who's like on the podium of the CrossFit Games?
Yeah, well, it's so different. Everyone is so different, you know. Pat is very hands-off. Like, my job with Pat is more like a partner, like a brainstorming partner. When we're not competing, my job is to program for him and give him very specific goals and explain to him what the context of the training is, why we're doing these things, do a little bit of reverse psychology sometimes because he can get really opinionated, and just to constantly find ways to challenge him. But when we're on the competition floor at the games or at regionals, my job is really just to help him figure out the right plan for him. And I think that's where being an athlete comes into play and being a more adult athlete, let's say. So I was an athlete that was older. I didn't like being told how to do things. I wanted to figure things out and I wanted someone to bounce ideas off. And my best partner for that when I was an athlete was my partner, Fred. He was always, you know, asking me questions. Hey, did you think of this and things like that? And so I do the same thing with Pat, but I've coached other athletes that has been really, I have to tell them what to do, how to do it, when to do it, how much break to take and things like that, which I think some coaches are great at. I think that's where I'm not as good because I just, to me, it's like, I can't take control over an event that can change just like that for you on the floor if you have a negative thought. And then all of a sudden the plan that we made just isn't the right one. So it can be very challenging when you're faced with someone that just doesn't tick the way you do. It can be very stressful. However, what I feel like good coaching looks like is just constant conversations. And it's less about telling people what and how to do it. It's more about getting to understand what they feel like and then try and make a plan that you think will be good for them in that moment and how they feel. So it's a lot like coaching. You know, I've coached classes and I've coached games. Like, it can be similar. Like, there are some people that are going to walk into your class feeling like garbage and that have a competitive mindset. And they're not competitive, but they have a competitive mindset. They come to the gym and they want to do well, but they had a really crap day. They went through a breakup. They're finding that this skill is not good or whatever. And you have to talk them out of that to get something out of them. And it's very similar with games athlete.
So usually the process of an athlete looks like you start CrossFit and you fall in love with CrossFit. And then with a lot of people comes this point where they want to start coaching. Mm-hmm. So the same for me. I started CrossFit as an athlete and then I thought, okay, it would be cool to coach like you did. Is there any advice which you would give to someone who's at this point where he thinks about, is coaching the right thing for me? Should I try it out?
Yeah.
Because I think not everyone makes a good or great coach and not everyone needs to be a coach. When I'm talking to the people in my affiliate, I send them to the level ones and I tell them, you can do it and you don't have to be a coach after that. It's just for you. It's self-development. Yeah. But a lot of people, they're getting confused and they think, okay, when I do that, I have to be a coach. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think coaching in CrossFit, like if you have an idea, if you have one little fiber in you that says, I think I want to coach, like, why not? Just try. Because, you know, I don't know, like if you would do a disservice if you don't try. I'm a big advocate for, like, if you want to try something, try it. Like, there's nothing that's stopping you. And I think the reasoning behind wanting to coach is just sharing enthusiasm, right? When you found CrossFit, you were like, this is the best thing ever. I'm going to tell everybody. And the next step after that, when you realize that people are sick of listening to you talk about CrossFit, it's like, well, how can I share this enthusiasm that I feel? And so it just makes so much sense for people to feel the desire to coach when they just love what they're doing so much. It's kind of like, you know, I'm like, a lot of the things that I talk about, like, we're at the Coaches Congress now, I'm going to be doing a talk about self-awareness. It's something that I hold dear to my heart because it's something that I've been working on for a long time and I want to share it with people because I've experienced it. And so I decided to take this opportunity to do that. And I'm learning more about it as I'm doing it. Like, is it going to be a groundbreaking speech? I don't think it will be.
We'll figure it out.
We'll see. But what I mean is, yeah, I had to try because there's just something in me that needs to share that. And so I think athletes or anyone who's looking to coach, there's something in coaching that is bigger than just coaching CrossFit. It's caring about other people. It's realizing that this changed my life. I want to help change other people's lives because it changed my life. And that's so human. And so I think that the more people who try it, the better it will be. It doesn't mean that they're going to be good. And anyone who isn't a good coach, hopefully they'll have the self-awareness to realize, like, no, this isn't for me. And sometimes you think you're going to like something and you don't. Like, I was an athlete, a professional athlete. I was like, I'm going to be a professional athlete. But I actually didn't like that. I liked some parts of it, but I couldn't see myself doing it forever. So it could be the same thing for coaching. Yeah.
So I asked Daniel Chaffee a few weeks ago the same question. What in what makes a great coach? So what if there's one attribute you could use, what is the one thing that makes a really, really great coach?
I think that's a very good question because there's a lot of little technical, practical
you have to,
things.
You have to pick one.
I don't want to say passion. Passion's not the right word because it dies. But there has to be something that just carries you. Like it's like a mix between passion and discipline. It's like it has. If I were to pick one, I guess it would be passion. You have to be passionate about something. It doesn't have to be CrossFit. You don't have to be passionate about CrossFit to coach CrossFit. You know, you could be passionate about sports. You could be passionate about speaking. You can be passionate about interactions with people. You can be passionate about people. But being a good coach, you have to transpire something to people. And if you don't transpire that something, I feel like people are just going to be like, that was a nice experience, and then they're going to move on. So to me, a great coach is someone that will have an impact on that person for a very long time. I still think about my coaches when I played water polo, the ones who were bad and the ones who were good. And then the ones who were okay, I forget, you know? So that energy, that passion, that desire to make an impact has to be really there. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be a great coach only if you give those amazing 60 minutes every single time. That doesn't mean that. Like, actual greatness doesn't look like that. Actual greatness just is like maybe a smaller version of that extreme passion, but on a consistent basis, you know?
So what is the best thing that could happen to you as a coach? Is it the first place finish at the CrossFit Games, or is it something completely different?
You know, when I got into CrossFit as an athlete, I wasn't into winning. It sounds funny, but I always felt weird because I was like, I don't care if I win. I mean, obviously if I win, it would be amazing, but I really love the process. As a coach, I have found it very annoying that Pat has not stepped on the top of the podium. It's been a little bit annoying. But I think that, in reality, that's not why I do it. Why I coach is because I am passionate about helping people achieve their goals. I am passionate about programming. I'm passionate about I'm a solution. Like, I like to find solutions, but I also love when my athletes thank me. And so if at the end of my career, like if Pat turns around, doesn't win the games, but you know, turns around and says, thank you, I've had a wonderful career and things like that. Like, I think that would be the most gratifying thing. So, you know, coaching is a thankless job. A lot of the times people are so into the emotions, they don't remember to thank you, especially in the competitive world, not in the gym. In the gym, you get thanks all the time. It's great. But in the competitive world, it's like, it's a lot of hot heads, a lot of intensity. So you don't get those opportunities a lot, but lately I've been getting them. So I mean, I'd say I'm living the dream right now. Like it's a nice time to be a coach. Yeah.
I mean, there has a lot of, changes happened, especially on the women's side in the top level athlete field.
Yeah.
A lot of the younger girls, they retired early or they dropped out of the competition.
Yeah.
And Tia was gone and a lot of things have happened.
Yeah.
Laura won the games. And I mean, you and Laura probably had some history together as
yes.
well. Do you have any predictions for this year? Like, Pat looks really strong. He looks really good
yeah.
when I compare it to last year's. But it's very hard to make any predictions, right?
Yeah. So CrossFit is like, you can't make predictions in CrossFit. You can tell who's going to do well and have like a ballpark idea of how, you know, Pat always does well unless he has a catastrophe. Like, mind you, he has one every year, but like, it's hard to make predictions. I'd say on the female side, we're looking at kind of like a reconstruction. I think on the female side, we're seeing more reconstructions than on the male sides. And I think that Laura is going to be a top dog for a very long time. I coached Laura from like 2017 to 2018-19. And when I saw her and I met her, I knew she was going to win the games one day. It was obvious. So I'm very proud of her, even though we don't work together anymore. I'm really happy to see her in that position. I think she works hard. I think she's come a long way as a person, as an athlete. And so I think that the time to have gone on the top of the podium was right. I don't think she would have had the same level of success now if she would have been on the podium. Like, she was on the podium her first year, but after that, you know, she had some things to do. But I think that she's going to be top for a long time. I think Tia's going to come back and she's going to be top for a long time. I think Emma looks like she's demonstrating a lot of solidity. She's not the flashiest and she doesn't get the most attention compared to other athletes, but I don't think that's a bad thing. What we've seen on the female side of the sport of CrossFit has been really unfortunate lately. And so hopefully, I think that's letting a lot of female athletes slow themselves down. And I'm only saying this because it seems that there's an emotional disconnect, you know? There's something up. I don't know if it's the age or if it's the female side of things or the pressure or whatever, but it just feels like there's something up. So I think the three girls that I just named are going to be top for a while. And you can't not mention Ariel Lowen. You can't, like, all of these, the women that were in the top last year, to me, like, all pretty much deserve to be there. So I don't have any predictions aside from I think Tia and Laura are going to have a really good fight and it's going to be really exciting. But I also think there's going to be people like Emma and all other people that are going to, it's going to be a competition that's exciting because there's going to be middling that's happening, right? Like, we've seen this for so long on the men's side with Matt Fraser, and he was winning everything and no one was middling. Like, no one was making the fight very interesting. So on the women's side, I think we're going to see that, which is super fun. Like, who wants to see a competition where you know who's going to win on the first day? So I'm excited to see the women's competition.
Yeah, especially with the changes in the venue. I mean, now we're in Texas, and
yes, I don't know. We'll see.
It's probably most likely indoors because I think outdoors it's too hot.
It could easily hit like 40 degrees Celsius down there. So I wouldn't want my athletes to compete outside.
No, I'm really excited to see what the programming looks like for the games when you have like mostly indoor events. And
I think there's gonna be, I don't know how to say it in English. There's going to be a little bit of a heartbreak to see the games go indoors. Like, there's something so magical about having the outdoor games. It's always been like that. It's always been so different. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm excited too. But I've learned from CrossFit that you can never count them out. Every year that we think something is going to be garbage, they pull something out of their bums and they do something amazing. So as they're not perfect, but they always put a good show on. So I'm although I wish I it wasn't there, like, I'm not, like, I don't want to insult anybody, but I kind of wish it was outside. But if it is indoors, I think that's the safest thing to do.
let's wait and see. I think they thought this through, and I think they didn't just do it because the venue looks cool. So let's see what happens.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit because the venue looked cool.
Hopefully not too much. And it's going to be really exciting. I mean, before the games, there's the Open in a few weeks. And although the games athletes, they don't really care about the Open as much, but still very fun, especially for the community. And I'm really excited for the season.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Michelle, thanks for your time.
Thank you so
much,
Felix.
Appreciate it. Yeah. And talk soon.
Thank you so much.